good afternoon. You are listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, trying to keep this place running like a fine-tuned machine.
We said no Trump references
about,
this week.
Okay. How about when Irish eyes are smiling? Is that... No, he's shaking his head. Okay, folks. Scotty Hertz here on the controls. Very happy to be here. What a lovely day.
Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel, or you can subscribe through iTunes. Today, we will consider the rise and apparent fall of Milo Yiannopoulos, the Breitbart editor and provocateur, hated with the deep passion of a thousand suns by his social justice warriors everywhere. Were his comments about looking at the bright side of pedophilia finally a bridge too far? And then we will look at the electoral reform issue. A group of Guelphites have come up with a plan to put reform back on the front burner, and they will be testing their new system, local proportional representation, tonight with Lloyd Longfield. We'll talk about the system and whether or not PM Trudeau might be able to be convinced. And then finally, Tom Mulcair. This time last year, most NDP members wanted him gone, but in the wake of a lackluster leadership race so far, a lot of people are looking at Tom with new eyes. Might he be convinced to stick around? Can he stick around? Does the NDP even know what it wants? We'll ask those questions and more, but first... Canada is now the country with the problem of people flooding in over our southern border. The last several weeks have seen a spike in people illegally crossing the Canada-U.S. border, seemingly in order to escape travel restrictions and the deportation forces, which are now facts of life under the Trump administration. And now the government, Scotty, our government, is stuck on what to do next.
Yeah, I'm not sure how stuck they are. I was looking at the numbers in this, and in Quebec... They said it was about a 230% increase. Sounds fairly high, but it was only 452 people. And in Emerson, which is getting a lot of press because it's so darn cold and people are, you know, doing the trek and losing their limbs, mm-hmm. was 99 people in Emerson so far this year. So is that really a flood? Perspective-wise, I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, it's getting there. And I get the impression once the weather improves, especially out in the prairies there where there are massive stretches of our border, unwalled and unprotected and whatever, just snowmobilers and the owls out there. and, of course, the refugees, that the trickle may become a flood. I don't think we're quite there yet. And the government does seem to be humming and hawing a bit. I thought it was very interesting, the pressure, the Twitter pressure that was coming from the conservative opposition, in particular from Michelle Rempel, who seems to be very vocal about the Yazidi population, yet somehow this other flood is problematic. Mm. But better than that, one-upped by Tony Clement, who hung up on the Daybreak show on CBC Montreal because like he didn't like... The short version is it pretty much said, well, what's your solution? And he just kind of went, click.
Yeah.
So I didn't listen to it. I saw the transcript and I thought, yeah, that looks about right. It's like, they need to do something. They need to do something. And then it's like, okay, well, what would you do? Click. So, yeah, there's not much going on that side of the fence, I don't think. But.
Well, that's exactly what I would have done if I had that interview. Because, yeah, if you listen to it and Tony Clement's like, the government's got to do something. She's got to do something. Why aren't they doing something? And it's okay, well, come up, give us some suggestions.
What would you do?
And he's just like, well, that's not what I'm here for. Bang.
I guess Tony won't be on the show, but... That does seem to be a patent conservative move. Who else did that? Chris Alexander did that once, right?
But it's sort of what the playbook was for years in the United States with and we're seeing that play out.
Now it's your fake news. So that's the solution now, right?
But we're seeing that play out with the Affordable Care Act, and like now that they have the actual power to repeal and replace it, they have no idea what they're doing with it. But I mean, this is what I found the core vexing thing, and it's, you know, we got to do something. It's like, okay, well, you know, let's have suggestions, and I think sheer enforcement of the law, and I think the way that goes down is basically once they sort of step foot on Canadian soil, they get the full nine yards in terms of access to legal counsel and being able to apply. If they're stopped before they cross the border, then they go right back to the United States. And added to this is, I guess it's I hate to call it a loophole, but it kind of sounds like a loophole. If you go to a border crossing, like a straight up actual border crossing, say, Hi, Canada, I want to apply for refugee status.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, you are in the United States. You have to talk to the United States government about refugee status. And then, you know, they send you away. But if, you know, you walk, you know,
through the marsh.
You walk through the marsh, you know, across farmland,
snow.
You know, a few hundred yards away, stomping through the brush. And then you make it on Canadian soil, then you're golden. It's so tough because, you know, you hear these stories about, you know, people like literally risking life and limb in places where it's actually still cold in the winter. And you can't help but think that there are have to be legitimate concerns that they would go to this kind of trouble. This isn't just people who... who want to milk the land of milk and honey, as it were. That, you know, these are people who genuinely feel that they are being persecuted in the United States. And
well, for sure, because there was one lawyer, an immigration lawyer, commented. He said they're not crossing in -30-degree weather for fun.
No,
right? It's not as if, you know, you're not going to take that risk. Like, as I mentioned, those, I think, were they from Ghana? Those two fellows that lost almost every digit on their hands, frostbite, you name it. But in some ways they're beckoned, I suppose, by, you know, signals from the government, because, you know, Justin Trudeau's famous tweet was, Canada will welcome you. I mean, that's sort of a bit of the tweet when the immigration rules changed under Trump for that very brief period, right? The seven countries, Trudeau was pretty much saying, come here, essentially. So word spreads fast.
Well, that's why a lot of people read it.
It's spread in the pre-internet world, and, you know, if there's a pathway to Canada where we can claim. And I think, if I've got it right, the ones that are crossing not at the border who haven't, there seems to be a pipeline coming up from Mexico where you can pass, if you can pass through America undetected, then the third country agreement doesn't really apply, does it? Like, you've sort of bypassed everything. You've been through, no one's seen you, and it's like, oh, I haven't made a claim anywhere else, then you're okay.
Well, that's the other loophole, is you can be dropped off in, you know, Guatemala or, you know, Venezuela or something, and, you know, take the long march northward. And if you can avoid detection, yeah, you can say, well, this is the first place I claimed. It's like, yes, I landed, you know, just off the coast of Brazil, but I made my way to Canada because that's where I want to be, and that's
Better from than where I came from.
Yeah,
so of course. Yeah, like the lawyer said, it's not a fun thing. But
I am hesitant to say how much of this is Trump related, because it does seem like, looking at the numbers, it was up from 7,022 border crossings in 2016, which is up from 4,407 in 2015. So, you know, unless, you know, people saw Trump coming, you know, in terms of a victory, which they would be the only ones, it's hard for me to say that this is a purely gut punch Trump reaction. Although there could be the elements that allowed Trump to claim victory, that people were feeling beforehand, and perhaps in the places they were did not feel as safe, and perhaps started driving this.
Yeah, there's a few factors at play, and I think one of them is that they have found this pathway.
Mm.
So you can bypass the fairly stringent American controls. There's lots of controls in Canada. There are plenty. For every happy picture you've seen of an RCMP officer picking up a little kid and smiling and whatever, there's somebody getting hauled away in cuffs.
Well, you know, those kids were getting hauled away in the baby cuffs.
Yes.
So.
They don't just, you're not going anywhere, kids. Like,
after
Bye.
That camera was snapped, they put the baby cuffs on the baby.
It's
so.
Okay, can you hang on and not take the shot? Yeah, we got to cuff these guys, a zip tie or whatever, they use. So there's I don't know, there's a little bit of myth-making going on, I guess.
Oh, Canada, there was complete myth-making going on.
This great freedom, we will welcome you, and then we're going to slap cuffs on you. Yeah, so it's not...
Yeah.
There's a bit of presentation saying, you know, I think mostly along the lines from the conservatives saying that, oh, they're coming in. And this will be the thing, if there's one person that comes and causes any kind of problem, then that's when, you know, all hell will break loose, the whole, you know.
Well, fortunately, the trend is these aren't the people who cause the problems.
Exactly. But it will. That it's one of those unfortunate things that there'll be like one guy, and it will be a guy. And then that'll be when it begins.
Well, it doesn't even have to be one guy. It has to be like rumors of a guy, like what happened in Quebec a couple of weeks ago.
Or a bowling green. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Oh,
yeah. We don't want another bowling green.
It's that kind of talk, though, right? It's like, oh, my God, here they come.
And yeah.
They're coming for you.
Yeah, exactly. Ugh. But the trend does work in their favor, but the flip side of it too is that the NDP wants to suspend the third party agreement too, which was also like, I mean, it seems to go in the NDP playbook of like just, you know, no you know, appeasement, no working with Trump, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera,
which is illegal. Yeah. And I don't think the administration to the south, that's me trying not to say Trump, yeah, we'll say that's not a good deal. This is a terrible deal.
It's a terrible deal.
So, I mean, they can pretty much do with it. We can suspend it and then just, you know.
Trudeau inherited a mess.
Exactly. Handle it in a Canadian way. But they're probably quite happy because it's like, you know, they come to Canada, they're no longer America's problem, really, right? It's like, that's how they'll look at it. It's like, okay, they're just moving on and we don't have to.
Oh, no.
We have to pay for them with our taxes. The Canadians can pay with their taxes. You know, yeah. That's the attitude, right? Which is just completely ridiculous.
Because that's the flip side of it,
people.
Too, is we're not going to be building a wall and making the U.S. pay for it. That's crazy to talk. But the thing is, we can't even say, like, hey, we got all these people like coming, leaving your country and coming to our country, a little help. And they're going to, you know, the response is going to be, well, you wanted all these people. You, like, opened the door and you said, come on in. And Trudeau is the happy, shiny man who's going to make their life better. So go for it. We don't want them. And
yeah, I think it would be a different story if the pathway was going the other way. Remember 9/11? Oh, they came from Canada. Like, no, they didn't. But
yeah,
you know, but that's,
yeah, there's still people who think that. Yeah.
If it was the reverse, that people were, say, coming across the Arctic. And there are actually plenty of refugees, at least in Europe, that are going like via Norway and all these routes that you would never, ever dream of. But, it is that bad.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about this, too. We're hearing a lot about Emerson and Quebec, and yet the whole, and I'm sure the flow hasn't stopped at all of the refugees in the Mediterranean, but I can't even recall once this year seeing anything about the situation there. And remember last, it was just like top of the news all the time. It's just been superseded by so many things, but it's like
anything that could float had like 12 people on it trying to get to Europe.
And that was kind of like the story that was on the CBC last night of the old inner tubes taking people across from Guatemala to Mexico who will further come this way, or at least that's the plan. But so there was a little bit of that. It didn't look as precarious, but they are, again, hosing them, whereas, you know, if you're just a regular person crossing over from down there, it's like $1, and if you're a refugee, it's $10, you know. So it's like more of the same, really. But, and I, you know, I think until we see stability in those areas in the world, which isn't forthcoming, really, the flow isn't going to stop. It really isn't.
Well, the test over here, I think, is going to be, like you said, are we going to see the trickle turn into a flood when there's nice weather, or at least nice weather in those places where people can cross? Certainly nice weather here, but there's some big lakes in the way. You know, that's going to be a real test. Are these numbers going to explode at that point? Because, you know, you have in January, people in Quebec, 452 people, which is up from 74 in the December 2014. In Manitoba, you have 403 people in 2016, which is up from 252 in 2015. And already they're at 82, and I'm 82 people who've come across the border since January the 1st. So, you know, extrapolating that, you know, 82 times 6, you know, that's...
They don't seem to mention any other provinces. I mean, you know, Ontario, obviously difficult because of the, as you mentioned, bodies of water and that. Manitoba, obviously wide open prairie, but, you know, I think Alberta would be good. Maybe they do. I just haven't heard anything like the people going into Alberta.
Well, I think...
Or BC, even, for that matter.
Well, I think when you're getting into the Dakotas and Montana, you're talking about even bigger plots of open area.
So they just pick you up.
So, yeah.
You'll just get scooped before you're even in the...
Right. So in the case of Minnesota, it's where they're walking across from. The Minnesota isn't an incredibly populous state, but it's easily more populous than someplace like Montana, where you can fit everyone in Montana in, you know, the Twin Cities. I do understand that. Although apparently there's like even people in the Yukon, you know, crossing over from Alaska. It's
willing to take that chance because life is that bad. So.
Or they're afraid of life getting that bad. I mean, that's the key thing is where all the horror stories that you hear coming out about the deportation forces, and they are deportation forces, you know, people being rounded up who aren't criminals. The story of that one woman in Texas who was an undocumented worker.
And that was her crime, wasn't it? That she didn't have the proper documents, right?
Yeah,
they call them criminals, but it's like you didn't have the papers.
Well, I mean, all things being equal, you know, all those people are criminals because they are in the country illegally, but if that's the only crime. But, I mean, the woman who was dating the abusive boyfriend, and then he reported her to ICE.
Oh, rat.
And, you know, now she's on her way because, you know, the guy who was abusing her, you know, used it as a leverage, I guess, which is completely wrong. And I think completely defeats the spirit of what President Pumpkinhead is talking about when he's talking about, you know, how we're only getting the criminals, the bad dudes, a lot of bad dudes out there.
Some of them are good people.
Well, not the bad dudes.
Others are rapists. Yeah, I mean, we've heard it all. That's a shtick. We know that. So,
all right. Speaking
it's
of bad
dudes, easy to make fun of Trump next.
Speaking of bad dudes, you may have heard of Milo Yiannopoulos. He was this tech editor at Breitbart, which basically means he was, mostly wrote about social media. He had a side gig of being, of just like getting on stage and saying the most awfully disgusting, misogynist, homophobic, Islamophobic things. He is probably most famous for canceling an appearance at UC Berkeley after they started a riot in his honor. Although this week he was going to take another level of more mainstream celebrity, but he was going to speak at CPAC, which is the Conservative Political Action Committee. It's a very huge, huge, bigly event in Washington, or rather in the Washington area. It's a gathering of conservatives. They had Ted Cruz there. They had the double.
Supposed to be audible there.
They had the two pack of Rance Priebus and Steve Bannon on stage together today. Milo Yiannopoulos was to be the keynote speaker, very prestigious spot for any conservative to be. But an anonymous Twitter called the Reagan Battalion found.
Sorry, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, it's the Reagan Battalion.
The Reagan Battalion
found a clip from a podcast called The Drunken Peasants. And if there's anything you probably don't want to disclose, you probably don't want to do it on a podcast called The Drunken Peasants, where he just basically said, I'm going to find the quote here, but because I think the context matters. La 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 la. I don't have the quote. Anyway, it just basically said, that relations between men and boys, quote, could help those young boys discover who they are and give them the security and safety and provide them with love and a reliable sort of rock where they can't speak with their parents. So he's basically talking about 13-year-olds and older men and how, you know, that's fine because, you know what? Anything that makes you feel comfortable, that's all good.
Oh, if you could see my face. And that, you know, this guy is an anomaly when you think about it, really.
Oh, yeah.
He used that old, well, you know, he'll say things about trans people. And it's like, but I'm gay and I have a black boyfriend. And he comes up with all these sort of distraction techniques, I guess, so he can say these derogatory and ridiculous things. And it takes this to trip him up. After everything the guy said, and he got banned from Twitter, and he was on about Leslie Jones, and he's racist and Islamophobic and transphobic, misogynist, all of the things he said, it takes this, like, internal thing. Because it's his own people that have taken him down. It's not the left. It's not these people that were marching Berkeley, oh, get rid of him, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It's not them at all. It's like they've finally decided that he's stepped over a line that the conservatives aren't comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And that's what's brought him down. Like, I wouldn't say just a peg. I think he's done. I think he's like in terms of a media Gomeshi level of done. He is done. I mean, he'll find his niche somewhere. Maybe like the rebel.ca will take him on or something. I don't know.
I will point out that I can't remember if it was the Globe or the Post, but somebody pointed out that they should just bring Gian back to Q. I can't remember who wrote it and for what publication, but I mean, the it's over. Let's.
It was never good. Anyway.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's just my opinion.
But, I mean, there is a forgive Gian.
Candy Palmiter. Sorry. Anyway, just a bit of a sidebar. She's awesome. Just hire her.
Yeah.
Good Lord. Anyway.
Anyway,
total sidebar.
That's all right.
As he speaks on the radio. And this is the Q of Guelph. No, it isn't.
Oh, this is Q.
Okay, anyway.
Guelph.
Milo. Guelph.
Yes, Milo. I did watch him on Bill Maher on Friday.
Yes,
I because I was curious, because I hadn't seen him in his speaking in any way. I'd only heard the name in passing and that people hate his guts. And, you know, the thing about... I know a lot of people were ticked off that Bill Maher would book him. I know Jeremy Scahill pulled out of the show because he didn't want to appear on the same show as Milo Yiannopoulos. And I get that.
First Amendment right to do that.
But but I wanted to look this guy in his face. And what I saw was is a person who somebody like took Rush Limbaugh's brain and put it in Perez Hilton's body. And I saw...
Yeah, that's pretty accurate, actually.
It was such a caricature. And he and what I saw is someone who feeds off the love of being hated and the boos and just people thinking he's disgusting. And there are a couple of people like this. Tommy What's-Her-Name with The Blaze, I think, is the same way. Because you can actually look up comments from her from, like, 2012, 2011. Yeah. And they seem sort of rationally conservative. By the standards of you know what you would think someone center right would be, but she's gone whole hog hard right alt right, and it's because she and Milo and a few others, among them Steve
Bannon,
know that when you go whole hard right and you get to the point where people will get up and scream at you and protest you and shut down your speaking engagements, that's money. Because people are going to pay attention to you and going to be like, this person is so dangerous. I got to know what they're saying. I got to listen to them. I got to buy their book. I got to see their lectures and their speaking engagements. I got to engage with them on Twitter. It's that's, money. That's what it is.
It is. It's all eyes on the page. That's what it's about. Laura Penny called Milo Yiannopoulos a court jester. And that's how I saw him. It's like they were okay with him until they stepped over that line. Because court jesters can say... all kinds, or can. Are there any left? Somebody's got one. Mugabe.
Harley
I don't know.
Quinn?
Somebody's got a court jester somewhere. And they can say all kinds of stuff, even about their hosts, let's say. But then, you know, there is a tipping point. They usually end up strung up at some point, right? So that's what's happened.
Oh, yeah.
To this professional
troll. The jesters
troll.
Are the first to die. Yeah.
Like, this is the modern era of people who make a living. $250,000 advance for this now-canceled book.
Mm-hmm.
Who gets that kind of money for a book now? Like J.P. Rowling, maybe, right? But nobody, like, that's big bucks, right? So, and then it just comes crashing down and lost his gig as, did you say that already? The Breitbart, his Breitbart editorial position is now gone.
He left, but there's rumblings that he was... That,
swirl in the bowl. And his defense was useless because he was like, he said, oh, it's my British sarcasm. And then it was, there was some deceptive editing going on. Doesn't really sound like a guy. And then the best, and also the worst, he's like, well, George Takei said something similar years ago. Like, oh, nobody went after him. It's like, and I read the Takei quote, and it was like, not really the same. Because I think he maybe have had similar experiences. But, you know, Yiannopoulos was pretty much given a thumbs up to this. And, of course, the conservatives. I mean, the conservatives, particularly the American conservatives, aren't okay with gay anyway.
No.
So how this guy stuck it out so long, I don't really know. Maybe this is supposed to be the new face of conservatism in the States. But when you've got all sorts of legislation, whether it's the... And it was weird because he was gay, but he was anti-trans. Like the whole trans washroom bill thing, if he was allowed to comment, he'd be like, oh, this is great. It's wonderful. I was like, shut up. But yeah, that's how I feel about it. Shut up.
Well, that was one of the things that got him, right, was when he, I guess, basically mocked. He mocked this trans student at the University of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Her name is Adeline or Adelaide Kramer, basically like projected a picture of her because she had been involved in protesting not being allowed to change in the ladies' change rooms at the university. Or she was allowed to go into the ladies eventually. They said, oh, you can go in, but you can't get changed, which sort of defeats the purpose of going into a change room.
Yeah.
But then he comes to U of M and projects her picture on, and she's in the auditorium, and he's like, here's the problem with America. This person who is like just confused and is like a man who just wants to be in with the ladies, and isn't that a danger to you ladies and other girls? And it's just pure, again, it's pure provocative talk meant to spur a negative reaction from rational people who want to stand up for rights, because the flip side of it is, if you are trans, you are 60% more likely to get beaten or assaulted or hurt by straight people in these sorts of public situations, in the public change rooms and the washrooms.
And yet the brand new change rooms at the University of Guelph in the Athletic Center are universal.
Good.
As it should be.
Yeah.
So we're talking a bit about a different world up here. But I also want to mention, because, along the lines, we have sort of our, I would call them a Canadian version, maybe not as extreme, is Ezra Levant, who is, he's blocked you, hasn't he? You mentioned that you've been blocked by him.
I'm blocked.
Yeah.
I'm blocked by Ezra. I'm better than Ezra. No.
So maybe I'll have a go now and see what
I know. I don't even know what I did.
At it for, he probably just took one look and said, oh. Guelph? Blocked. Guelph, you're blocked. Start with G. Blocked. Yeah.
You know what? I do get...
Did you ever comment any of a thing of his? Or retweet, maybe? Yeah,
I'm not going to go through...
Why would you retweet him?
I might have done a sarcastic kind of retweet. Like, I sometimes do that with Trump tweets or other weirdos tweets. But I'm not going back through 35,000 tweets to find out where I honked off Ezra.
But he obviously found it.
He found it at some point. I didn't even know. I think you should get a notice when somebody blocks you, but I didn't even know because he was tweeting something and I couldn't read. Somebody had retweeted something and I couldn't read it, so I clicked on it. It's like, and it goes to his feed and it says, you are blocked from this follower. I was like, what?
You're a player now, son. That's awesome.
I must be. It feels like I'm a player.
The recent rally, the rally for free speech, kind of reminds me of, it's the Canuck version of the Yiannopoulos, right? Where we have this sort of fear of the other, and also them creating their own pile of fake news, right? Like this, the venue change and all that stuff. It's like, it wasn't really...
Right. It's the same sort of persecution complex because they said they had this rally scheduled at a hotel, and the hotel apparently canceled it when they found out the full extent of it. But the rebel phrased it as they were getting threats. And then I think it was Canada Land that asked them, did you guys get threats? And like, no, we just found out he was a dick. And I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but that is, I mean, that's the whole point of it. And that's why when people get so outraged about Ezra or Milo, my immediate reaction is to try and bottle the outrage because they want the outrage because it fills like a self-prophesized thing that they are the right ones. I mean, correct, not right-leaning. But they are the persecuted ones because they have the right answer and... it fuels this fire. I mean, it's a money-making enterprise.
Oh, yeah.
And if you can't...
or they try. They did some kind of pass the hat thing, right? They get the buckets out and everybody's like, ah. And of course, there was that photo of the woman. It looked like she was giving a Hitler salute. But also, I've seen it in Pentecostal churches, which I've been to a couple times, actually. Not by choice, but...
Or it's like the Hunger Games.
Long story.
Salute.
But the hands up in the air is
the
that kind of
three-finger
like,
salute, yeah.
You know, I feel your... Yeah, the... Whatever.
They could be telling the press to peel the banana.
But
for
I think
all we know.
In reading the blog, your blog, we were talking about the free speech rally. You called the rebel repugnant, so maybe that's why Levant blocked you. Maybe he's reading your blog.
I was blocked before that.
You're blocked before that.
I was blocked before that.
I have to do something so I can get blocked. It's the mark of. But it's a badge of honor in this show if you get blocked by the rebel. Having said that, no, we can't get Levant on
the he rebel commander.
Levant wouldn't come on here. Commander L would come nowhere near here.
But no, I mean, I do find it repugnant because it's all about stoking the hate.
And
it's
absolutely.
Like if you want,
agree,
and,
totally.
But I will stand up for Ezra to get access to things like COP22 and the Alberta legislature.
Sure.
Because as we've seen with Milo, Once people started stealing Milo, it started to fall apart. Mm-hmm. Once people see you, and this is where the Trump thing comes into it, is for years, the alt-right was stuffed into a corner, shoved into a box, and that was how it was allowed to grow and fester. And every time we do that, we're sort of creating the monster.
That's how you end up with Hail Trump, right?
Exactly.
Come on.
Exactly. So, yeah, let's have these people out in the light of day. Don't confront them with anger. Confront them with facts. Confront them with openness. But, yeah, Milo, we hardly knew you.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I'd punch him. Anyway.
We're going to take a break here and come back after a break and some music. And you are listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Needs more kazoo. That was the Everlovin' Jug Band, brand new in on the station. I think that's like the last CD on the new release library. I played that for selfish reasons because I really wanted to hear it.
That wasn't from like the 1920s?
No. See? There. Tricked you as well. No, it was that's a modern recording made probably late last year. That song was called Set the World on Fire. I think they're from KW, although they definitely play Guelph regularly. They seem to have a regular thing at the Cornerstone, so go to the Cornerstone website and they might say the Everlovin' Jug Band are playing. So,
yes, go to the actual. Well, go to the Cornerstone.
Go to the Cornerstone, have a grilled cheese, and listen
or,
to jug
vegan,
band music.
Vegan cheesecake.
I love it all.
Yeah, there you go.
I love everything today. I don't know if it's because it's 13 degrees, but whatever.
Well, speaking of loving things today, Democracy Guelph is hoping that Lloyd Longfield is going to love their solution for electoral reform later today. It is called Local Proportional Representation, and you can read all about it on Guelph Politico because I was at the workshop that they held last Thursday night where they were just kind of going through the quirks and quarks of it. It's interesting because it's kind of I call it kind of like a best of all worlds option because basically what it does, basically this group Democracy Guelph met with Lloyd Longfield and he said, okay, here's what you got to do. You got to have a specific plan. It's got to.
Well, he actually did. Well, that's good in a way, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. But he said you have to. Yeah, it has to be a specific plan. You have to have MPs in every riding. Can't have more MPs. And can't create more ridings or redraw the ridings. It has to be 338. And then it has to be simple. And then you have to get widespread support for it. So
they came up with something called Local Proportional Representation.
LPR.
And you gave a bit of an explanation on the blog, which was good. It still took 7 minutes. But that's not your fault, though, because, why don't you tell us a bit about the system? Because it's very interesting, and yet I'll comment on it when you're...
Okay, so I'll try to be as brief as humanly possible. So
we don't have 7 minutes, man.
We don't have 7 minutes.
Well, we could.
But, we have half an hour, but this won't take that long.
No.
So basically, the electoral map will look exactly the same. But what they're going to do is they're going to group together sets of ridings into regions. So for the purposes of the experiment they talked about on Thursday, you have Guelph, Milton, Oakville, North Burlington, and Wellington, Halton Hills all grouped together. Now you'll get the ballot, and you can see the picture. And I did a little video explainer too.
That's good.
You get a ballot, and you can put in if you just want to vote for the MP of Guelph. You just mark your X next to Lloyd or the Conservative candidate or the NDP candidate or whatever, and there you go. Your writing is highlighted more darkly than the other writings, but you can also rank every candidate on the ballot from one to however many candidates there are. You can also, if you want to rank ballot all the candidates in your riding, you can put the one next to Liberal, two next to the NDP, three next to the Conservative, four next to the Green, or however you want to rank it. You can vote cross-party line. You can just vote 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 for all the Liberal candidates or all the Conservative candidates. And like I said, you can also vote, if there's 22 names on the ballot, you can put 1 through 22 next to all the names. So you submit that, and you go. The theory is that It's going to promote proportionality. Like, say you think the best person to be your local MP is Lloyd Longfield, so you put the X next to him. But say your political proclivities are more towards the NDP, well, you can vote for an NDP candidate in one of the other ridings. So I won't get into how the counting goes, but
because that,
because I mean, that's the most complicated part of all this.
Yeah, because it's like, to me, it sounded like it was, I don't even know if it's on a curve. I'm going to play the confused voter here.
Okay? I'll play the confused voter.
Part of the confused voter will be, or at least let's call me engaged voter with questions, because this is Guelph, right? So it's like they expect nothing less than something like this to come from Guelph.
Yeah.
The first thing when you were explaining it in your podcast was, what if somebody, this was just, the first thing I thought of was like, what if somebody puts three number fours?
Right.
What happens? Because you've got 12 choices, 1 through 12. You have to keep all that straight. I mean, how do you know without a little abacus or something beside you or something to keep it straight? I guess you could read it over. But when you, I think when you immediately introduce complexities like that to ballots, as we saw in the MMP back in the day, when if there's any level of like, people just sort of, you know, get that sort of glazed look. There's a bit of a second part to that, too. And you, maybe you, I probably explain this or is that. How it sounds to me like it's mostly a ranked ballot. It's first pass. Right. Suppose you say, okay, person X in Guelph, fine. How does me choosing the NDP as my ninth choice in Milton help with the end result?
Right. I'll answer the first question first because I think that's easier. The doubles. The doubles,
six, like what number put twos. Someone, you're like,
I mean,
whoa, yeah.
What are the odds you think somebody's going to fill out all and
I
rank
would.
It all? You would rank 1 to 22?
Why not?
Well,
if,
I suppose.
If I had that option, they said, you know, you can have a choice that this person in Burlington is somehow going to affect the vote.
But it's,
but I guess,
right.
Or if you were, I think it's called plumping the ballot. I mean, if you were just partisan, you didn't care who it was, and you were, say, well, let's say green.
Yeah.
20 greens run and there's a green in every run. You just go green, 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 green. That has to have some effect.
Sure.
If 1,000 people in Guelph did that, that is going to have an effect.
Well, of
Plump
course.
The ballot. Then, we just want green. We don't care who they are.
Well, that's, but.
Right?
Fair enough. But
now, what percentage? The argument was that something like 0.7 people voted for fringe. I don't know if that fringe includes the greens. I don't think it does anymore.
No. Well, no, it can't because greens
could
get at least 3%.
Yeah, nationwide. But the greens are in the basement in a lot of writings, right?
Well, I mean, if you break it down by running, but I mean, this is one of the solutions they think that this is going to cause. It's like you're not going to have as many ghost candidates just to fill up the ballots, right? Just to fill every riding, you know. If you,
I guess theoretically that's true, but that they all roll like that.
Oh, geez, and chair kind of
slight technical difficulties.
There, but no,
okay.
I'm just so excited to talk about electoral reform.
The chair exploded.
I think the point is if you have good, solid green candidates in Guelph, Milton, Oakville, and Wellington, Halton Hills, are you going to put like just an empty shirt in Oakville, North Burlington, where you're kind of dividing your resources when you can have people get genuinely excited about these other candidates?
So you're concentrating on ridings that you think will do well, and then you don't have to worry about the other one.
Well, I mean, theoretically, yeah. I mean, this is all theoretical, right?
That at the snail's pace we work at, it would take probably a good couple of generations before that changed,
well,
right?
Again, to go back to your what if you put in 2-4s? I think that would be a spoiled ballot. I think that's.
And would it spoil the whole thing?
I would imagine.
So my first choice then for person X in Guelph wouldn't.
I don't know the exact answer because this wasn't addressed, right? But
I think if it was done on a computer, then the computer could tell you, say, you have already put.
Well, that may be a
four.
Part of this, right?
That would work.
But
and they'll be like,
I guess there is an element of responsibility, right, to read over your ballot and
sure,
especially if you're going for for the 22 listing all 22
people
options.
Spoil ballots with regular ballots. It's just an X with a pencil. They somehow manage to mess that up,
right?
So.
And no,
and those
right.
people will probably mess up the 12 choice ballot.
And it's you're right. And I think the flip side of it is that. Because of there's such a tremendous number of ways you can cast a vote. I think a lot of people on the first pass at this are just going to put the X next to the name of the person. that they want to do it the old-fashioned way. Or if they're feeling particularly adventurous, they'll list the Guelph candidates. You know, I think a lot of people are going to look at this, well, who cares what's going on in Milton? I don't care. I mean, I think one of the other potential biases in this is, like, if you look at the conservative names, you know, you see Lisa Raitt in Milton, Michael Chong in Loganholm Hills. Well, there's kind of a... I guess that's maybe, let's call it a celebrity bias there, because they're well-known conservative members.
But there's people that would probably, that may very well vote Green in Guelph and then totally vote for Michael Chong. I can see that for sure.
I could
I might even consider voting.
What was your second question? You had a second question. It was about the count, wasn't it?
Numbers and the count.
Yes.
How does the me voting for, let's say I put Michael Chong ninth choice, Wellington, how does that... To what percentage does that affect the vote? Because I think if people find out that that's only going to make a thousandth of a difference as to where that person ends up, then who cares?
Right. Well, it depends, right? I mean, if there's like a lot of people who rank Michael Chong as their number ninth, maybe that's not going to make a lot of difference. But, you know, what if a lot of people mark Michael Chong as their number two or number three difference? That might make a world of difference Sorry, let me just spit this out.
We're both really new ballots, yay.
Because the quota, there's the quota system, right? If you have two people running in a race, the quota you need to win is 50% plus one. And it's okay if you don't...
majority rule.
Right. Yeah. It's okay if you don't get this right away, because I had to sort of explain it to myself a couple of times. But one other thing I will say about this is easier than almost every other proportional representation thing I have looked at. And I'm a fairly political person.
Of it involves serious math.
Right, and I don't think this is serious math.
Yeah.
So once you get to 51%, and let's say you get 49%, or not 49, like 59% of the total vote take you as number one. Well, once you get to 51, they're going to take that other 8%, and then those are going to go to the number two choices.
Yeah.
So that the next group can get to the 51% mark, and so. You see where I'm going?
Yes, but how does that affect them? You have somebody with a clear majority.
Right.
You have somebody with 59%.
Right.
How does... Let's just say it's Chong in second.
Yeah.
Does it help his chances in the riding that he's in, or is it just like...
Yeah.
Now number two.
No, it helps his chances across the board.
Right. So you vote for person X and Guelph, but then you're sort of giving a little bit of backing to another horse in a different riding.
Right. Let's say you are out of 100 people, and you are the 52nd person to vote for Lloyd, and then your number, so your vote is not going to count towards Lloyd, so they're going to look at your number two choice, and your number two choice is Michael Chong in Wellington Hills. So now your ballot's going to go to help elect Michael Chong.
Tell you, if this happens, I think our election coverage is going to be 10 hours long.
No, that's the other thing about it.
You're going to be here at 5 in the morning and be like, I don't know who's the winner. I really don't. Or you're saying a no.
Yeah.
That's a no. It's going to be better. Or is it going to be a long...
I actually like this system.
If computers do it,
this is the best.
We'll be okay.
This is the best proportional electoral system I've seen.
That's
a
vote of confidence.
I think, and I think I've been a skeptic of PR, and I openly say that. It's like, I think we do need electoral reform, but I am a total PR skeptic. I don't hate this. I think this can work. I think it's simple enough that we can explain it to people. Because at the end of the day, if you just want to put an X next to Lloyd or Gloria or Gord or whoever, Bob's your uncle.
And I'm not really a PR skeptic, because I think parties run whoever, wherever they run. Good example is Elizabeth May. She ran like in three different places in Canada before she got elected.
Yeah.
Clear across the country. Started on the East Coast.
Oh, yeah.
Went to the West Coast.
Opposites.
So it's like, and I get, you know, and that is trying to get a seat. But it's like... If you had a slate, then, you know, who cares? It'd be okay. Elizabeth May won, and whoever number two. And anyway, we could probably do a whole show on this, but we best get to.
I just want to say,
if
any of this is of interest to you, at E-Bar at 7 p.m. tonight, Lloyd Longfield is going to be there to, and this is going to be presented to him. And again, one of the caveats is of his. His list of, I don't want to call them list of demands to take this further in Parliament.
He's going to nail it to the door.
Is that he wants to see widespread support of this and not just the usual suspects
in the
electoral reform crowd.
Mm-hmm.
If this sounds interesting to you, come on out to E-Bar tonight at 7 p.m. And follow along. I will be there. And from what I understand, there are actually a lot of Liberal MPs, too, who are disappointed that this isn't going forward. So, I mean, mean, Trudeau keeps saying this is my decision, and so you should believe him when he says this was my decision, because there are a lot of Liberal MPs who...
And X, if you include Frank Valerian, right?
Frank Valerian has been a part of this as well. There are a lot of people who are
Liberal
disappointed.
Liberal MP emeritus, so, yeah.
That's right.
Is that a thing? It is now, yeah. So.
Well, we made it. Patented, trademark. So, I hate this chair.
Speaking of other elections.
Yes. With Tom Mulcair.
Ranked ballots? No, yes. Yes. That's a ranked ballot election, isn't it? It will be.
For the leader, yeah.
Yeah.
What's interesting, we're talking about Tom Mulcair, because apparently there's this underground, maybe not so underground, but sort of campaign to get him to reconsider stepping aside. There was a National Post article written about it, and 5,000 people had signed up on a Facebook page, and I checked it before the show, and it's actually up to 5,225. So he's doing okay, but he's saying like, yeah, no, I'm done, I'm leaving once the election campaign is over, or the leadership campaign is over. What I found interesting was that a lot of people are upset, and again, this is like NDP, talk about electoral reform. These are the guys who have been pushing it for years and years and years before it was cool, under Prime Minister Cool. A lot of people are, and I found and in the National Post article, are saying, well, a lot of us are Tom Mulcair supporters. We can't afford to fly across the country to a leadership convention where this was decided purely by the people on the convention floor. So, I mean, it kind of plays into that party elite angle.
Well, sort of, but the NDP have had a mechanism to deal with that, didn't they? It was like to do with delegates, and it was like you can swap delegates. And it's like, okay, if you don't feel represented, then we will represent you. And that was their way of making it fair. Now, I don't completely know the mechanics of this, but I know that, you know, they've had delegated conventions for years. It's not as if this came out of the blue. So they don't like the result. Well, I mean, what was his vote of confidence? 52%? And there's people step down that get 70 or 65. It's really, really low. And they can't rerun it, you know, because I know if they ran it in Toronto or somebody else, it would be. But, you can't have this established system that everybody agrees to within the party and then just say, oh, that was unfair. The Greens did something similar with their BDS.
Yeah.
You know, that passed at a convention and the higher ups didn't like it. So then they redid it and came to some kind of compromise. I think the word consensus was bandied about, but it's like consensus isn't a vote with 51%. Consensus is everybody. It's a completely different world of making an agreement. But Mulcair's pretty much said that he's not sticking around, and that, I mean, there's not much anybody can do about that. But yet, it's so weird that he's being referred to as the steward. It's stewardship now, not really leadership. And then, of course, I can't remember when it was, just before the turn of the year or whatever, somewhere around Thanksgiving, the caucus gave him support to sort of shepherd the party through to this October convention. And that was when he was talking about the core values, feminism, pacifism, environmentalism, and he used the S word, and he said socialism, and I'm like, why weren't you doing that before? Yeah. Like, that's where you guys belong, right? And in my view, anyway. So it was like, it's weird that it took that for him to pull that out. The S word, exactly, which is a dirty word for lots of people, including, I believe, a lot of the people that support Mulcair, right? Because they see him as somebody you can go head-to-head with Trudeau, but it was obviously proven in that election that that's not the case. So they need fresh meat.
Yeah, I do wonder how much of this is a response to the lackluster leadership race so far. I mean, you have Peter Julian, who's the only candidate in, although Charlie Angus is having a special event tomorrow in Toronto. I wonder what
horseshoe.
He means by that. Oh, is that at the Horseshoe? I didn't know that.
The Horseshoe. I was invited.
Oh, nice.
I just threw the vine or whatever, but...
Speaking of...
I'm not party, by the way. I hold no card, so...
It looks like it's going to be a two-man. I mean, you have, what's his name? Gurjeet Singh in Queen's Park is maybe considering a run. Nikki Ashen maybe as well. Guy Caron as well. But I mean, nobody's kind of, signed
there
any official 14 papers.
14 people beaten down the door to be in there.
I crunched the numbers.
Yeah.
At this point, if we're comparing races, at this point before the leadership campaign, if we're talking about the conservatives, this is like the November of last year in terms of the timeline. So just think about how many conservatives, how many debates there had been, how many events, how many statements, how many candidates were in. I mean, Kevin O'Leary is the last one in, who just from a couple of weeks ago. And but so there were already like 12, 13 people in the conservative race at this point of their leadership contest. Yeah. And at this point, there's only one person?
One.
And I mean,
probably
well, two,
three probably by the next couple of weeks. And
so
it's so like, eh.
I am looking at this.
Like, ah, whatever.
And Tom Mulcair has been on fire in Queen's Park again. He's got like kind of the his groove back about, you know, screaming at stuff and the angry Tom angle, which is, I think, where a lot of that support for him was at the beginning. And then there was also a poll that somebody did where they ranked campaign research where they asked about 1,500 people who the to approve the leaders, and he had 41% versus JT's 39%, although Rona Ambrose got 36%. So it's not, you know, leaps and bounds a huge thing. So, I mean, there's still a tremendous amount of, I think, goodwill for Tom. But yeah. I do think it's just purely a matter of he's the one talking, and nobody else in the party is looking like a leader.
No. And I think it would be a bit disingenuous for him to go to the post and say, no, I'm not doing it. And then I'll say, well, you know, maybe I'll do it. Like, it probably wouldn't be the best choice, but he said it was weird. Like, that article started off as like, okay, he's done. And then it's like, but we want him. We want to keep him. I actually got in touch or tried to get in touch with the Keep Tom Mulcair Facebook page, and, you know, to no avail. And I mentioned the show, and I said, you know, I'd really like somebody to come on, or just can you give us as to why you want to keep him, other than because the majority of comments I see was like, he's the best, let's keep him. I was like, well, why? You know, give us a little bit of beef there as to why. It's like, we need to keep him. Why? He got smoked at the convention. Why do you want to keep him?
Well, and
let's,
I think,
just keep him around. He's okay, you know. No.
Well, I think a lot of it comes from, too, that I think a lot of people are looking at back in hindsight and with rosier glasses. I think it comes down to the fact that he's a great prosecutor, but he's not great on defense. A great prosecutor does not necessarily make a great defense attorney.
No.
And that's what you are when you're prime minister. Mm-hmm. When you're in opposition, you're prosecuting. When you're in government, you're on defense.
Yeah.
So it's two entirely different worlds. And he's great in the one, and I don't think he's so great on the other.
No.
And I think people have kind of forgotten that. They've forgotten how he looked on the campaign trail with the, like, oh, we only need 30 more seats. No, you need 100 and some odd seats.
Yeah, so that was some. Although, they're still the second highest vote total ever, right?
Well, that's what people forget, too.
44, right? 44?
Yeah. Well, that's what people forget, too. But everyone talks about it. It's like, oh, it was a slaughter. Well, it's only a slaughter in comparison to how you did in 2011.
I mean, realistically, if you want to run the numbers like that, it was like 100% decrease of the amount of seats that they had, right? So, post-Layton.
Yeah, but...
So...
And that's another thing, too.
The liberals stole all their stuff.
But that's another thing, too, is it's a hard act to follow. And this is this is the thing that I think whoever wins the conservative leadership is going to look at. And when they win and be in Harper's shadow, when they officially have to start owning things, Rona Ambrose can kind of skate right now because she's interim. But, when that person, be it Kevin O'Leary or whoever, wins the leadership.
Trost.
They're going to be...
I just like saying Trost.
they're going to be in a pretty in a pretty big shadow, in Harper's shadow, and that's not going to be so easy to climb out of in one election.
No,
either.
They just have to be a little bit more cheerful, though, and then it might, you know.
That'd be nice.
And we'll have them on the show, of course. We'll try.
I wouldn't mind having...
Still trying the Trudeau channel, so...
Well, we're trying
Justin,
a lot of channels.
Yes. Justin, tell him, you know, I call.
If Justin is your... Justin's going to have you blocked.
Return my calls. I don't understand.
No wire hangers. Anyway. it seems like we're getting there. Anyway, the... if you want to, we have a lot of really great guests on the show, and you can listen to, go to our website, opensourcesguelph.com. We have the Catherine Fife interview up there. We have all our interviews up there. There's a guest page, our past guest page, where you can just find the link, right, go right to the show. Coming up, we are working on getting more guests in. Dan Gibson's going to come back in a couple of weeks, or he's just waiting for ski season to be over because his kid does skiing, so it's kind of a thing, you know. He's got to be a dad. It's not his fault.
Looking forward to seeing you again, Dan.
And Parkash Sardana of Guelph Hydro, we're waiting for confirmation for him to come on the show, and we're trying to get other local area MPPs on the show. So stay tuned for all that, and we will keep you updated via our Facebook page, Open Sources Newswire, @OS_Guelph is our Twitter feed, and of course, get that podcast on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or through iTunes. You can connect with me at Adam A. Donaldson on Twitter, or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and thespannerbook.wordpress.com.
And you can find all those links on our website as well. Just stay tuned for DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
We put the elf in Guelph, yes.
We do indeed, and we will see you back here next week, Thursday at 5 p.m. for more Open Sources.